listening to WWBC Coco Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco Rockledge and W264AS Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny, beautiful Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet.
That's right. And from the Irish one in the crew, happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. Amen. We are heard everywhere, 1510wwbc.com. You can get us on any one of your listening devices by just hitting that Listen Live button on that website. Of course, our On Demand button is also all of the shows that we've had over the last, well, maybe not the last 15 years, but certainly the last 7 or 8 years. You just look up on Mondays, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we're there. Of course, we share everything on our social media channels as well as our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right. So for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, if you're a first-time listener, if you're a first-time sponsor, whatever, first time for everything, we sit here on Mondays from 1 to 2. We've been on air for over 15 years, Ellen. That's kind of hard to think, 15 years, but we did it. We talk to people here in our community and folks around the world, people right here in the United States, all different states, whether you're an author, you're a writer, you're making a film, you're an actor, you're a singer, you want to talk about financial literacy, lots of politicians. We've got people that advocate for just about everything, women's rights, the environment, clean air, clean water, to treat people with respect and dignity no matter where they come from, immigration reform. Gosh, I think we touch about pretty much every single subject on
Zeus.
This show. Yeah, we do. We sure do. So Ellen O'Neill is my right hand, my co-host for 15 years. Thank you. You're a wonderful friend. They don't come like you. And Allie Tambor is here, and Danny's running aboard. And, of course, we've got a pack house. My good friend Matt Price, he's an RN, BSN, is here to talk about what we can do as citizens in Brevard County, Florida, to save Orlando Health Rockledge Hospital. And he brought with him a nurse, Nora. Nora's here with him as well. We are also going to be joined on the phone by Dr. Saima Abbas. She's an MD, an infectious disease physician, who feels strongly that we should try our best to delay closing the hospital or even keeping the hospital open until a new one is built. And Nora, your last name is George.
Correct.
Yes, yes, yes. I tagged everybody on my Facebook, but you're not on there, so memory, yeah. Our second segment is with my good friend, Dr. Terry Jones, whom I'm so proud of. Terry has inspired so many people in Brevard County, Florida, for the works she has done through Eastern Florida. She's a veteran. She's an author. She is now getting involved in making a film that, hear this, I was talking to somebody in the gym this morning, and the lady had no idea that Melbourne, Florida was founded by 3 African-American slaves, which I think your film would be wonderful. And so it's great that we have a community radio that can share so many wonderful things about what we are doing. And so, Terry, you'll be on the second segment. Welcome. And you brought with you 2 awesome guests. If you'd like to introduce them really quick, I'd let you do that.
Absolutely. Segment. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Sita. I first want to introduce Mr. Mark Spate Smith. He's actually the film executive director and president of HGMI Studios. So through our collaboration, he is bringing the film to Melbourne about the journey of the former slaves who came. They were freedmen when they came to Melbourne, and they were homesteaded property. So in the Crane Creek area. So we'll talk more in detail about that later during our segment. But Mr. Mark Spates, and then with him is his chief executive, Ms. Victoria Herring. And she's here to support and add anything that she may need to add or we may ask her as part of this segment. So thank you for having all of us.
Wonderful.
Here. Glad to be here.
Oh, we're just thrilled. We love when we have people in the studio that, you know, we always sit at Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We give on valuable information in a very unscripted manner to educate the public. This is our role as people who are getting older, bolder, and wiser to give the world our very best and leave a good footprint behind, right? And that's what we're doing. Yeah, we are wiser. So let's introduce Matt. So Matt it has been a critical care nurse for 28 years. Matt, you don't look 28. But you've been a nurse for 28 years.
I have. 1997.
He graduated.
I graduated.
Thank you. Graduated from Barnes Jewish College of Nursing in St. Louis, Missouri. And he's worked at Worcester. We cannot read the entire bio because we've got so many people in studio, and I have to talk about Nora a little bit. Nora is also an RN who graduated from the University of Illinois. Oh, I lived in Oakland, Illinois, Springfield in 1999, and she's also a nurse, a critical care nurse at, I want to say Worcester, but it's actually Orlando Health, right? Rockledge. On the phone, we have Dr.
Still all call it Worcester.
I know, it's hard. And on the phone, we have Dr. Saima Abbas. She's an infectious disease physician who's been practicing in Brevard County since 2010, and she currently works at Orlando Health, and doctor feels very strongly as well about us keeping the hospital open or delaying the closing of the hospital. So I guess since you want to go first with Dr. Saima?
Yeah, let's bring her on.
Matt is taking charge like the critical care nurse that he is. All right, so Dr. Saima Abbas, talk to us a little bit. How did you get involved with what's going on with the hospital? Of course, you work for the hospital, but I know there's an active group, and you have a name for that group, right?
Yes, it's the Save Rockledge Hospital Group. And we developed a website, too, so people can find all the important information there. It's save-rockledge-hospital.org.
It's not on Facebook because I couldn't find it.
It is not on Facebook, but it is on the World Wide Web.
Ellen will look that up right now. So, doctor, thank you for taking time from your busy practice to call in and talk to us a little bit on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about the hospital.
Thank you so much, Sita. It's my privilege to be here and speak up for my work family and especially for the Brevard County community that we have been serving for so many years. So, you know, this 60-day notice came as a complete shock for us. And as we are trying to absorb the impact to our all individual selves and our colleagues, the most concerning is the destabilization of the healthcare access that will impact the community. And so, you know, all hospitals are run on ambulance runs, and they bring in sick critical patients. And if this hospital shuts down, the fire chief has stated that it was going to take 40 minutes for patients having a heart attack, stroke, bleeding, or any pregnancy-related labor emergencies. So 40 minutes, people will start dying in the ambulances. So this is a business decision that was taken by Orlando Health, and this truly, truly needs to be re-evaluated because it is not serving our community at all.
Yeah. You know, doctor, it seems as though the hospital should have had some sort of a community forum or where people could have gone and voiced their opinion about the closing of the hospital. Because I've spoken to so many people who said, well, the hospital couldn't be saved because it's such an old building and the air conditioner doesn't work and, you know, things like that. But the loss of healthcare for the residents in this area, in the Cocoa and Rockledge area, I mean, someone should have taken that into consideration and have the citizens speak up. Did the hospital do such a thing and try to get the community involved before they decided to close it?
I don't think so. So they just bought us in a bankruptcy deal. And to be honest, they really did not want to buy this old building. They didn't care for it. So now they are announcing, and this is a business decision, like I said. They haven't been in the community long enough to care for it or to understand the impact of their decision. So they do not have a contingency plan either. You know, most of the staff at the hospital is scared to speak up because they are still working for Orlando Health. And that is the harsh reality, that very few of us have found the moral courage to speak up against this injustice.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I stand up for all my colleagues who cannot speak up at this time, but there was no invitation for a discussion. This was just an announcement. They were just filling a box saying that this is a 60-day notice and this is the day the hospital will be shut down, following by a demolition with no contingency plan to give us a different hospital. And what are the interim arrangements that need to be made by other hospitals to accommodate the 30,000 people who show up in our emergency room every year? So this seems like a very rushed decision. And as old as the building is, we, you know, braved on through the pandemic in that same old building. And with whatever we had, we gave it our all during those very difficult times. And so now calling it unsafe when, you know, we have the Leapfrog A safety scoring, we've scored well on that, JCO, all the commissions that come to inspect this hospital. And this hospital was inspected before the sale. So suddenly it is, it's something that cannot continue to work, and the impact that that will have, this is completely unfathomable how this is happening.
Right. And you know, the sad thing is we all wake up every day and, you know, everyone who's working, we're working for healthcare. We're working to pay our mortgages. We're paying our car payments or children's school. I mean, the people who make these decisions, do they actually put the staff first as well? Because you think, you know, we care for our patients and the community, but at the same time, there's live human beings that worked in that hospital that depended on that paycheck to survive.
Matt and Nora can tell you very well how they've treated the people who are currently working there.
Yeah, so Matt, I'll let you address that. Tell us a little bit about what kind of notice did you all get when they decided to close the hospital?
Well, we know that the city of Rockledge received a notice about 20 or 30 minutes before we did. And as we were saying, you know, it's 60 days backwards from April 22nd. It's not it's not a full 60 days, really. They've already started to wind down the services there at the hospital. And so different areas are starting to close already. But, you know, Orlando Health acquired the hospital in October, and they've actually done some repairs already of the building. And so it was quite a shock to us for them to say that the building was not in a condition to continue operating, because we have many more functional elevators working now. Some of the other infrastructure systems that we were using lease services on the back of a semi truck for a year or more.
And
those are all been repaired
during COVID.
Yes.
The hospital served its purpose.
And through many hurricanes
I was at that hospital when they had a few hurricanes. My husband used to work in the emergency room as a physician for over 16 years. And he's very distraught over the hospital closing as well. I don't know if a lot of people in the community know this, but Wusthof Hospital, aka Rockledge Health, Rockledge Health, it's emotional for a lot of us who moved here. We moved from Illinois when my husband finished his residency. We went to Marion, Indiana, and then we moved here to the ER here. And we saw a lot of growth in the hospital. We made a lot of friends. The community used that hospital. So many of our friends' children were born there. And I just feel like when the hospital, unfortunately, became too much of a for profit. When healthcare becomes a for profit industry, we suffer. The citizens suffer. And corporations don't have feelings. Whoever sat down in that boardroom and made the decision, hopefully men and women in suits and jackets and ties, they didn't talk with the doctors like Dr. Saima or the nurses like Matt and Nora to find out exactly what's going on with the hospital.
Yeah, we were excited that a nonprofit had purchased us in October because we thought that was going to mean them rebuilding our programs that all of these for-profits before had slowly just taken away. You know, we used to have a neonatal intensive care unit. We used to have a pediatric ward. We had a full cardiothoracic program doing bypass surgery and valve replacements. And all of those things were slowly etched away by these for-profits. And the last one was our psychiatry unit.
And so much for people talking about mental health. And, you know, of course, the politicians, which we won't touch, they all talk about mental health. But you closed the wing in the hospital that actually helped people. So, Dr. Saima, what can the public do at this time? Because people are heartbroken by this decision.
Absolutely. You know, Sita, I think this is a test for our community. Are we truly going to take this lying down and, you know, let them go ahead with the shutdown? I don't want that to happen. I think everyone who has benefited from this hospital needs to show up. We are doing a rally on March 21st. Please show your support, sign the petition, and talk to the governor. So one thing I need to mention here, Rockledge is an underserved area. It's a medically underserved area, and it comes under the governor's exemption service area. So the governor DeSantis can actually step in to help this community to save this hospital and to stop this healthcare access from being amputated the way they have started doing that. Other than that, please talk to your legislature, talk to the people, who are in power, who can help get Tallahassee to help us out in this. So one is the governor that we are pleading to. The other plea is to Orlando Health. They need to reconsider their decision, and they need to, I frankly feel that this hospital needs to be returned back to the community. This is a it should be a community hospital. We are so done with these private equity firms running this hospital to the ground. Steward actually took it down to a bankruptcy point, and that is why we are here in this position. So that is our final ask, is can it be returned to the community, and can the community run it? Because no one else cares for the impact this shutdown is having on our citizens.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing is, you know, you hear about everything that's going on in the community, and there's so many people lobbying for, you know, different, you know, clean water, clean air, you know, the LGBT community, you know, All Lives Matter, politicians, but nowhere did any of us hear about the hospital being in a situation where it will be closed. So what happened with the Board of Trustees? Was there any communication from the Board of Trustees to the public that the hospital was in jeopardy of being closed?
I think the Board of Trustees has been dissolved. I think Matt can confirm if there's any other information, but there was no other communication that I recall.
Yes, the Board of Trustees was dissolved when Orlando Health took over. They said they operate their hospitals with their corporate board, and that there was no need for a community board of trustees here.
Yeah, and I noticed that the city of Rockledge, the city council in Rockledge and in Cocoa, they're strongly encouraging to delay closure of the hospital. What about a congressman and a state rep? Has anybody reached out to them? Because I believe we can all sign the petition, which Nora will talk about in a minute. But there are people in Brevard who go to Tallahassee and are supposed to represent all the citizens, not just certain zip codes, but all the citizens. Have they been contacted, and what was their position on the closing of the hospital?
Well, I think nobody is happy about this, frankly. And I think some legislatures, senators, they are working on trying to approach Orlando Health and the governor's office, but that is all, not in our control. So we know that the Brevard County Fire Chief is extremely upset about the disaster that is coming. So a lot of people are approaching the governor about this issue. I have personally emailed Debbie Mayfield about our concerns. She is aware, but I have not received a response.
Okay, so Nora will tell us a little bit about the petition So, Nora, if you could tell us where we can get the petition to sign.
There's a link through our website, save-rockledge-hospital.org. And I can't say enough, please call the governor. They hate for that phone to ring. So call and tell, and it's in his hands now. We're not really getting any response from anyone. Everybody feels bad for us, and they've sent a resolution, but there doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency. And they're dismantling that hospital today, every day. They're taking more supplies out, leaving us with less. And, you know.
So Matt, you've always been part of the Rockledge Hospital, where you were always an advocate for strong health and labor and community standards for the hospital. How do you feel about this? Because people would come to you with their grievances from the hospital.
It's very concerning. We've worked very hard along with the hospital to improve the quality standards. Our nursing union there has submitted the first sepsis safety bundle and order set to improve sepsis care in our facility. And many other aspects of quality care that we have joined with whoever was the owner at the hospital at the time to improve that quality. And so now we're seeing them kind of turn their back on not only our community, but us as well. They're telling us that we're guaranteed jobs at their other facilities. But we don't have transfer rights. Many people that have applied or reapplied at other facilities have been offered up to 17% pay cut.
And you lose your benefits.
Yes.
You know, so Dr. Saima Abbas, for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're talking about the closure that's, I hope it's not imminent here, but on February 22nd, 2024, Orlando Health made a business decision to give a 60-day notice and close Rockledge Hospital here in Rockledge, Florida. So, Doctor, well, I know for a fact I've been involved in so many things in Brevard for a long time, running for office and whatever. I know that during election time, so many physicians from all backgrounds, they get together and they have, you know, a fundraiser for candidates to run for office. Can those physicians who help the candidates who are running for office, and can they come together now and call the governor? Are they part of this group that's trying to save the hospital, or is it just a selected few physicians that are speaking out?
I don't think a lot of physicians are speaking out, to tell you the truth. And I think I'm going to leave it to their own discretion. Many of them continue to and hope to continue to work at the other hospitals in Melbourne specifically. So I cannot speak for them. But all I can say is I am not employed by Orlando Health, and I'm an independent physician. But I am not wrong that in saying that every physician that has worked in that hospital feels that this is not the right decision for the community. So getting together physicians, you know, I think it's the people, the senators, the governor, he can get everybody he needs together. You know, one example I want to give you, Halifax Community Hospital was not doing well, but because of its strategic placement where there is Bike Week and, you know, they have races and everything, the governor himself has made sure that that hospital keeps running. So, you know, this is something which is beyond our hands. We have only 60 days and now only 30 plus days left. So getting all the doctor community is a great idea. I hope that if all the physicians who are listening, if they can come together and speak up, that would be amazing. But unfortunately,
yeah, because you can't give up without a fight. It seems to me as though, you know, like Matt was saying, I remember when they closed a couple of those wings, and people just take it for granted. Oh, they closed this ward or they closed this wing. And then you say, well, okay, the director of nurses will shuffle the staff around. You know, now these nurses will go here, right? But now it went so far that the actual hospital is sad. It's heartbreaking, right? So, I mean, can they at least keep the emergency room going? They've got to do something, because this is an underserved area, that this population, some of these people, I hate to say it, I know when my husband had his practice, we had staff members who couldn't afford gas to go to Melbourne. We had people who didn't have a good car. We had people who couldn't afford to buy tires. We had people that, you know, if you have children in school in Rockledge, but you have to go all the way to Health First in Melbourne, you can't come back to pick your kid up at school. So who's going to pick up the kids? I mean, this affects the community, right?
Yes. And outside of homes, we've offered more specialty care services at our facility than these other smaller hospitals around us. So there will be a loss of certain types of care as well, unless you wait somewhere else to get that care.
Orlando Health has also closed down the hyperbaric wound center. Why? It's a separate building, and it's the second busiest in
Broward County.
Why
do I get the feeling that a lot of this, sadly, is about the zip code where the hospital is located at? And money. I hate to say, because I come from a third world country. I'm a naturalized citizen, legally here, of course. I just have to put that out there. And, but I remember seeing hospitals in Trinidad and Tobago that the British had built over 100 years ago. And when they're rebuilding part of the hospital, or they're adding on a new wing, the hospital doesn't shut down because it's serving the community. So my whole thing, and Dr. Saima, you could probably speak to this as well. Why would they not try to upgrade this hospital while waiting for the new one to be built?
You know, that is a very good question for Orlando Health. So whether they can do part of the repairs, so, or they can do the minimum repairs to keep it open while they have a contingency plan and they are building a new hospital, would be the safer way to do it. But I cannot speak for Orlando Health. You know, we have lost our trust and faith in them, frankly, and I'm not sure why they made this decision. It seems unfathomable that they went ahead with this shutdown. And so I'm not sure if they are going to address our concerns, but someone in power in the governor's office needs to step in, and that is the bottom line. We are literally running out of time.
Yeah. Well, we have 3 minutes left, and I'm going to ask you really quick, Matt. So you formed this group, and how does someone join the group that you guys have to save the hospital?
We have a contact us link right on the homepage of the website. And you can reach us that way quickly. It'll go right to our email. There is a press release going out today about the rally coming up this Friday, that we want everyone that loves our hospital and needs healthcare to come out and join us for that rally at 1 p.m. It's going to be held in front of Ashley's restaurant, and we'd just love for everyone to come out that has a vested interest in this community and join us. And we hope to see our politicians joining us as well, and those that are running for in the special elections as well, to show their support for healthcare for our Central Brevard and North Central Brevard community.
Yeah, and Nora, what are you hearing from your fellow nursing staff members?
This shutdown has done nothing but sow confusion and fear, anger, and there's a lot of distrust of everyone, and a lot of people are afraid to come out and show their support because they are trying to get jobs in other places around
here.
Yeah,
and people don't want to be seen as troublemakers, but when
Correct.
You speak the truth, I mean, God gave us a tongue, and he gave us a brain, and he gave us the ability to be good human beings. And if you have that ability and you sit on it and you don't use it for the good of the community, what's the use of having that voice, right? So Dr. Saima, I'm going to give you the last word. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to call in and speak with us. So tell us, when people talk to you and ask you, you know, why are you getting involved and how brave you are to actually, you're one of the first physicians that I've heard of that's speaking out in to keep the hospital open. tell us some, you know, what we can do going forward with the last minute or so that we have.
Okay. Well, I think I have to give credit to COVID. When I was put at the front line of a pandemic and I was the only infectious disease physician, that is when I learned what the meaning of true courage was. And I saw all my colleagues, some of the best people work in this hospital, and we all came together. And so we are a work family. So other than losing that, I feel it is my duty to speak up for this community that I hold very close to my heart and that I have been serving for so many years. So this is just something that I can do to speak up for those who don't even know how they will be impacted by this closure. And may God continue to help us speak up the truth, and may God give Orlando Health some God-fearing spirit to address their moral compass, because it comes out to be a moral crime for me personally, that what this is doing is nothing less than that.
Right, and we said that life is about education and opportunities, right? So tell us, is there a certain person or an email that anybody knows of that we could email or call Orlando Health and say, listen, we live in this area and this is an underserved area and we're speaking up for the people that don't have a voice, who are scared. You know what? I figured 2/3 of my life is already over. I have 1/3 left. I can start speaking up and I can speak the truth. I don't mind sending them a letter. So how do we get a hold of them?
You know, there is opportunities on our website. If you want to, we have numbers for the different legislative people, senators. I think there are emails available online for the CEO. They are all online and they can be reached and accessed. I'm sorry, I don't know them by heart on my own.
That's okay. Ellen will look it up. Ellen wants to jump in here really quick.
They're all downloadable and they are all on the download. There's a download section of the website. Again, save-rockledge-hospital.org. The petition is there electronically, so you can just fill out the petition there. Excuse me. And then they're also asking for minimal donations to help fund making sure that they can get these flyers and this information out. So very easy website to navigate and fantastic. They even have a telephone script that you can use on the website.
I'll be telling them what's in my heart. I don't need the script.
I know. We're always unscripted,
because we moved
right?
down here because of that hospital. By the time I get done telling them how I made curry chicken and came there for the hurricane and stayed in the doctor's lounge and slept in the bed and worked in the ICU and everything else, I'll be telling them like it is.
You tell it that, and they're looking for those kind of stories as well. Well, Matt and Nora and Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today and letting us know about the closing of the hospital and what we can do to remedy that, hopefully. And we will do all that we can here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to make sure the word gets out to everyone about Friday the 21st, the rally that's going on at Ashley's from 1 to 3 p.m., Ashley's in Rockledge, which is right across the street.
And I want to say
hospital.
Really quick, Elle, which I don't like to interject when you're done with your spiel there, but they're talking about air conditioning. Try living in a third world country. There ain't no air conditioning, none of the damn hospitals.
Exactly.
Enough already.
Exactly.
I hate when people say, oh, my kids' school didn't have air. You know what? We come from countries where there's none and we survive. So, yeah, I understand doing surgery without air conditioning. But we live in the United States of America, but there's tons of electric companies out here that could go and fix your air conditioning in a jiffy. So
that's
stop
right.
using the air conditioning. That's all I'm hearing from people. The air conditioning doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we just need to donate. We need to sign the petition and support our friends at the rally on March 21st, right over at Ashley's in Rockledge on US 1. We're going to take a quick minute and listen to a few of our sponsors. And we'll be right back with Dr. Terry Jones right after these messages.
Nine Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super Savings Sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And I'm hurrying up because I want to give Terry Jones a time. Go ahead, Ellen. We're heard online.
That's right, 1510, WWBC.com. You can hit that Listen Live button. Get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we archive everything as well. And we make sure that that is also done on our website, cetamediainc.com, and all of our social media channels.
So what a blessing it is today to have such wonderful people in our studio. We've got Mr. Mark Smith. What a nice handwriting. Wow. And he is the creator and the writer and the executive producer of AGMI Studios in Los Angeles. He is the president. Victoria, without the C. Victoria Herring is here. She's the chief of staff with this young man right here, Mr. Mark Smith. And our good friends, Dr. Terry Jones is here to talk about what's going on with, gosh, so much Crane Creek.
Yes.
Who would have thought, right?
Absolutely.
So Terry, talk to us a little bit. Of all the causes you've been involved with in Brevard County, Florida, with helping at Eastern Florida, being a veteran.
That's going to take up
author.
My 30 minutes.
Yeah. You've chosen out of all of that to team up with Mr. Mark here.
Yes.
And you're doing a film about Crane Creek.
Correct.
So we can zero in on that because there's a lot of stuff going on. You've got the breakfast coming up with the dignitaries and all that. And you're going to have to start filming, get your actors and all that. Mm-hmm. So let's start with that. Why Crane Creek? Why tell that story now?
Right. So I credit myself as being a historian because I have a huge history, a huge passion for history and particularly Black history in this community. So 2012, I started doing some research. It was really research on Zora Neale Hurston. And in the process of that doing that research, I was at Overlook Park. I saw this marker, this historical marker on Peter Wright, which identified him as the first sailing mailman in Melbourne. So, and of course it states that he was a former slave that was brought here, and later on he became the first sailing mailman. So that piqued my interest. And after doing everything I needed to do with Zora Neale Hurston, I switched over to researching Peter Wright. And in my research, I identified that there were three former slaves, Peter Wright, Wright brothers, and Balaam Allen, who were all brought here by their former slave owners at the end of the American Civil War. Peter Wright was brought here in around the area, the time frame of 1867. Balaam Allen and Wright brothers came a year or two later, but together these men forged the community that we know today as Melbourne, Florida. Right. Yes, at the time it was Crane Creek, And 10 years later, after the white settlers started to come and they decided to incorporate the Crane Creek area, it was named Melbourne.
That's right. And as I was preparing for the show, it was astonishing. I read a little bit about the Melbourne Founders Museum at Crane Creek, and they were talking about the rich history in this area, mm-hmm. and that the Greater Allen Chapel AME was founded in that room.
Correct.
And you know, I have a lot of residents at the nursing facility that go to the AME church.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. So thanks to you, I'm doing history as well. And I'm learning, and one of the museum highlights is that from 100 years ago is one of the Bible. There's a Bible there that's over 100 years old.
Correct.
That the Wright brothers, I suppose, are responsible for that Bible being there.
Correct. So that museum, what stands today, and actually they just did the grand opening about 2 or 3 weeks ago, that museum is the former home of Wright brothers. So that home has gone through some restoration, but that is the original home that he lived in. It was right there on the bank of Crane Creek. Beautiful location. It was picked up, relocated across the street from Greater Allen AME, which is on Lipscomb Street. And between the efforts of the Greater Allen Development Corporation and Northrop Grumman, with their funds and their support, they turned it into a museum. So
you know, Ellen, I don't know if you know a lot about, well, you live in that area. You know about Crane Creek.
I do.
Right?
I do. I know a lot about it, actually.
And so, Mr. Mark Smith, here you come in all the way from L.A., and you're hearing the story. I mean, we're living in times when so many of us are really watching the eradication of history. And sometimes I feel, I hate to say it, but African-American history. And you want to leave a mark for the young people. How did you get involved and say, you know what, this is history in the making that no one talks about? That it should be, and every school, everyone should know about Melbourne, that it was founded by three slaves.
Absolutely.
And here you are, you jumped right in.
We're here. Dr. Terry Jones, her research, we vetted her research for about a year and a half. And when we reached out to her and we found her story, what we discovered was it was an American story that nobody knew about, a true American story. And so to be able to come to Melbourne and to bring this major motion picture here. Our production will start in 2027. It's a $7 million budget for this film project. And we are going to hire locally. We're going to film locally. But right now, our job is to meet the community, to build the understanding of the story, and to prepare ourselves for a production that, you know, I'm a little biased, but I think we'll get an Oscar nod in 28.
Why not? Well, I know two nurses that might need some jobs over there. So Dr. Terry Jones, you, my God, this is phenomenal. So not only will the film be produced in Brevard, here in Melbourne, Florida, but you're going to be bringing a lot of tourism dollars here, too.
That's the
businesses
time.
Will be affected. So tell us how, I mean, did you talk to anybody yet in Melbourne, like the mayor or other people?
Oh, yes,
and
ma'am.
How are we going to accomplish this? Because we want to be part of it as well.
Yes, we have. And this is part of the reason Mark Smith and Vi Herring are here on the ground, because we are doing the groundwork before we actually do the production. So right now we're in what we call the development and pre-production stage. And in that process, Mark has met so many influential individuals in this community.
Terry knows everybody. Let me just say, Terry knows everybody.
Yeah, we've met with the mayors of Palm Bay and Melbourne. We met with the chambers of Melbourne and Palm Bay. We've met with the EDC, Space Coast Tourism, the Film Commission, Brevard Cultural Alliance, Melbourne Main Street. We've entered the Women's Business District, Lead Brevard. I mean, the list just goes on.
And you, Terry, you've given so much. You have given so much to Brevard that this is payback.
Yes.
For everyone that you've touched their lives. And I've seen you. You and I, we go to so
way
many.
Back.
We attend so many events and put our hard-earned dollars into so many fundraising events and stuff that I feel like this is your time to shine. So here's the thing, the film. So we're calling it the Crane Creek, the Unforgettable Untold Story.
Yes.
I like that who came up with the word unforgettable, because that is so profound for something like this.
When I read Dr. Terry's research, it stayed with me. I literally was up maybe like two nights in a row just writing and thinking about the story. Crane Creek, it's a post-Civil War historical drama based on these three men. But it isn't just a story about their survival. It's about untold alliances, quiet tensions. You got the freedmen, you got the Seminoles, you got white settlers, traders from as far as the Middle East. They all cross paths together trying to find a home in the swamps of Florida. And mosquitoes, alligators,
snakes. They braved it all.
If you're looking for a comp in the film world, you all remember the film Glory with Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman? Crane Creek is going to be Glory in the swamplands of Florida. And to see what this story is told, at its core, Crane Creek is really about the price of building something that lasts when the world doesn't want you to. So we get a chance to tell a story that not only has not been told before, but you cannot forget it. Can you imagine three emancipated slaves in their late 20s with machetes trying to chop down the swamps of Florida? And now they got to work with the Indians. They got to work with white settlers. They got to work with traders from the Middle East, all to build what is a bustling economy right now in Melbourne. Why wouldn't we tell this story? It's going to be epic and grounded. It's a love story. It's war. It's passion. And it's going to lift this community to the national spotlight in terms of cinematic history. So on April 11th, we're kicking off our process for the next year. The big cocktail reception that night, there's a party on a Friday night with your name on it. You got to be there.
And I can dance. So I'm coming.
I'm dancing with you on that. Yes. It's going to be a great time.
You invite the people from the AME church, you'll get dancers.
I know I will.
I sang there. I sang there.
Come on,
sang there. She'll bring her band. So here's this all happened in 1884.
1867. Yeah. Was when Peter Wright was brought here. Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, you hear about history of Christopher Columbus, right? Mm-hmm. And other people. We all know what they tell us in school. Mm-hmm. But what happened that this story wasn't told as part of the Florida historical stories in the schools in Brevard County, Florida?
There's no excuse for that, Sita. Honestly, when I started the research, I had to really dig deep.
It makes you want to cry.
It did because a lot of the current publications that are out there today, there might be a sentence or maybe a partial paragraph out of a whole book. I literally had to write to different publishers to get other books that are currently out of date now, have them reprinted. I had to go through the expense, get reprinted books to really get more in-depth detail about these founders. And I think part of the reason, to answer your question and just, you know, to be fair about the times that we're in, we had to remember these gentlemen, they were former slaves, so they were not literate. They didn't know how to read, to write. I mean, they just knew how to use their lands and work the land. Whereas when the white settlers came in, they were more business savvy. They were literate. And so they could get them to trade some of their land with them, and they were building out. And eventually, literally, they went away, or they didn't have as many children because, again, these were rough times when you're dealing with an environment. And
are there any persons alive in Melbourne that you will be able to get firsthand stories from? Because, you know, we have stories that are hand-me-down from the grandmas and the grandpas to the sons and daughters and the grandchildren. I'm hoping that you can get some of those voices, and I would think that the AME Church would know people that actually knew the Wright brothers.
So I've gotten chatter about individuals who were maybe affiliated or maybe descendants of the founders, but nobody has come forward. The best I've been able to receive, two things I'm really happy to say. I found a voice recording. It was an oral recording of history from a young man who is the grandson of Peter Wright. And he's telling the story because when the city of Melbourne did the historical marker, the mayor's
Riverview
name was,
Park, right?
Yes, at Overlook Park. I believe the mayor's name was Mulberry. And this young man, he was sitting at home in Cocoa watching television, and he saw they were doing an unveiling of his grandfather, but nobody even contacted him or told him. So this oral history that has been recorded, that's one piece of information I have. And then just recently, because we are aware that of the three founders, one of them, Balaam Allen, does not have a headstone. And so I went from funeral service to funeral company to funeral company asking if they would partner with us in getting a headstone for Balaam Allen. I finally found one, my third one that I went to, Stone Funeral Home, which also was the first funeral home for the black citizens at that time. And they're literally within walking distance from the cemetery, and they're going to work with me to get a cemetery, a headstone.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the events.
Yes.
Because we want people to attend.
Absolutely.
And this is a project that's, it's a work of love. It's going to take a lot of time, energy, and effort. And we're living in times when we're watching politicians just sit quietly while history is being erased.
Exactly.
And I think that's wrong. I think history is there for us to learn how to become better people,
exactly,
better human beings, and give back to the world what was lost with the people that came before us.
And so we don't repeat it, especially the mistakes of history.
That's right. I mean, if we say all lives matter, and we say that, you know, that we want to be thy brother's keepers in words, thought, words, and actions, we ought to live it.
Yes,
and this is what absolutely. This film is about. We are going to honor these three men. So let's talk about the events and how we can get the public to support the events. I know one of them is a ticketed event, right?
They're both ticketed events.
Wonderful. Let us know. So
I want
Ellen
Mark
to put
go into some detail about that.
All right, Mark, you take it away.
So the ticketed event that's open to the public, there's a breakfast in the morning that's a more private gathering of about 50 VIPs from Brevard County that we're gathering together. We're going to honor some local people here as we mark the official launch. But Friday night, April 11th, is open to the public. And in this evening, you're going to get pre-production insights, red carpet moments. We're premiering an NFT collection, live music, cash bar, hors d'oeuvres, cocktails, the original art of the film. But most of all, on that Friday night at the Gleason Performing Arts Center at Florida Tech, we're gathering together. Have your cocktail dress on, ladies. Gentlemen, put on something nice and smooth. We're coming together to celebrate. You're going to see how the screenplay is developed from Terry's research. You're going to see a filmed presentation about that. You're going to see different ways that we are lifting up this narrative so the community can be involved in celebrating what is not just their history. Watch this. This is American history.
Right.
The good thing about this story is, in our film, you have black men, you have white men, you have Seminole Indians, you have Middle Eastern men that are traders in this space, all coming together. So on the 11th, when we come together for a cocktail reception, we want the entire community to come. Listen, don't bring your kids. Get a babysitter. But if you're grown and you love a good time and you love history and you want to look good and be around an atmosphere that's going to build something to Brevard County, this cocktail reception is what you do not want to miss.
And just, you know, what you just said is, you know, people from all walks of life.
Yes.
All different backgrounds,
yes,
came together without Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Without
come
phone.
Come on.
Without phone.
Yes.
Without written words.
Ain't that something?
They came together and they've created this historical time for us.
That's crazy.
Right?
They did the work.
So it's up to us to take it through now, right?
Yes.
Follow
yes.
through on it. And somewhere in there, it's going to mention Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes, it will.
Sure.
Yes, it will. Yes,
so,
it will.
And
so
just to follow up on your question, our community can access this information by scanning our QR code. They can find that at Eventbrite. Mark, can you tell them how it's titled so if anybody's looking right now?
It's the Crane Creek Cocktail Reception. Actually, if you go to cranecreek.film, you'll be able to see it. And if you go to Eventbrite, it's titled the Crane Creek Film Cocktail Reception. You'll get there. You can get your ticket. It's just $65 a ticket. It's going to be a great night. So Eventbrite, Crane Creek Film Cocktail Reception, and if you go to cranecreek.film, you'll see the link there to take you to the event.
Right, and how wonderful it is that all the proceeds are going to go towards helping with the film as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a lot of money to market the film, get the actors, everything. We know. So you're from L.A. When you tell your friends in L.A. about this project, are they all in awe and saying, well, why didn't we hear
about this before?
Question.
That's a great question. I wrote our partners, and you know, I don't want to name drop, but our partners in Los Angeles is the largest agency, the fourth largest in LA, a $3.6 billion partner. That's a part of what we're doing. And when we had a conversation about this film, at the end of the year, we had to commit to a certain slate of films to fund for the next year. It was between a comedy series I wrote called Bruno, about a white guy, an Italian guy protecting his family, was hilarious, and Crane Creek. And when we sat down, I had to fight for Crane Creek, and I said, listen, I said, the fact that we get to tell a real American story that's untold in real time, that involves all the races, what does that mean? And I'm telling you, for a person, our board approved the Crane Creek film because they said, and they're coming here on April 11th. They said, we want to be a part of something historic. And let's be clear, they know how to make their money back. We're a studio.
Right,
clear.
Right.
But to be
and
able
they
to,
should.
And
right?
they should.
And they should.
Yeah, but yeah. to be able to invest a $7 million budget in Brevard County, to be able to have a 6.3 demand spend of that money in Brevard County, they, you know what it means? It means they believe in the story. They believe in Terry's research, and they believe in the fact that we can make a darn good film.
And like Terry said, there's everything in this film. Mm-hmm. There's a love story.
Oh, my goodness.
Environment. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like Ali said, the alligators.
Yes. Alligators.
The life-size mosquitoes.
And most important, you have races. People from all different backgrounds,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So
very diverse.
But Terry, Dr. Terry, because I just love you so much. Tell me, what? Why do you think people would prefer to sit down and watch a little reel and laugh about it? Or they would watch the lady from Pakistan, from New York, who went to Pakistan on TikTok and get 2 million views. But when it comes to real history,
come on.
Who shaped your life and the life of future generations to come, that people are not interested? We've got to get to a point where boys and girls, if you're listening, teachers, educators, priests, clergy, everyone, we've got to know where we come from to know where we're going.
Yeah. Exactly. And we have to reach them. We have to meet them where they're at. So we have to reach them on the mechanisms or the devices that they're using and kind of redirect their interests. But you have to show that link. This matters because, you know, one reason is because you stand on the shoulders of those who came before you. And if you don't want to see the negative history repeat, you need to know about what happened so you can be vigilant, aware. And then you can form, as the gentleman here was saying, you can form alliances or rallies or organizations or committees to make sure you have watchdogs in place that will safeguard not just the history, but your future for yourself as well as your children.
Right, you're giving people hope.
That's
yes,
right.
Right.
Exactly.
And when people say hope and change, but here's the thing, we're sick and tired of seeing documentaries about people locked up in prison.
We want to
see some good,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
We want to see some good documentaries about right. what people did, so they don't go to prison.
And exactly.
This is a major motion picture. This is something you're going to go see in the theaters. You know,
we're going to promote the heck out of it.
Oh man, you better believe
if those three guys
you better
risk the alligator swamp,
come on.
Why can't we produce
come
movies
on.
For
yes.
them? Right?
Yes.
So, yeah. So Terry, give us your website, because I know you also have your own company. And
right.
then we'll take Marcus, Mr. Smith's as well.
Mm-hmm. So my website, it's healthcare oriented. It's meccaecc.org. But I really want folks to go to Mark's website. Yeah. I said Marcus. Excuse me.
I know it's all good.
Mark
he does
Smith.
Marcus Smith. He does.
I know.
There is
I've
a Marcus Smith in this community, so
there
folks
is.
Don't
I
get
saw
it confused.
But
this
Mark's,
is the handsome
the
one.
C,
okay.
A little more different than Mark the K. I'm gonna say that right now.
I saw Marcus on Saturday, and he goes, "I'll take a selfie and I'll put it on my Facebook." I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah,
Marcus,
we've
okay.
seen enough of his selfies.
Yeah.
But this, I really want everybody to go to Mark's website
yeah.
because it's beautifully laid out. Yeah. All the information is there. So I'm going to turn it over to Mark to share with the community
yeah,
his website.
Thank you, Terry. The website for our studio is hgmistudios.com, and you'll see all the things we're doing there. The Crane Creek is part of that as well. But the website for the film directly is cranecreek.film. And at both of those, you'll be able to see how to get your tickets for the reception on April 11th. But it's gonna be epic. I want to see you there, everybody. I want you to be like, I heard you on Cita's show, and this is my name, and I want to hug it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna dance with you, and then we'll get a cocktail together, and we'll know that we are bringing something to life that was history, but it was sanitized. We are unsanitizing
well,
it, telling it right, and making a difference.
People who made a difference, and I'll let you know that there was a film called Moving History in Melbourne, a documentary that was made by our friend Jennifer East. And they did. It was about Queen Creek and the Wright brothers too. It was a documentary. I will hook you up with her.
Moving history.
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, but this is more in depth. What you're doing is more like you're bringing the characters alive. Yeah.
And that was based on my research. I just want you to know that.
What, girl? But I must have seen you there at the Grand Ole.
But it was inaccurate.
Well, we need to. We're gonna get cut off here, Sita. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll make sure the replay is available, and make sure to get those tickets for April 11th, the gala. I've posted it on our Facebook pages, and once again, we'll see you next week right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.